Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome to our talk. My name is Daniel Schneider. I got Andy Park here from Netflix with us. And we want to talk to you about building media streaming apps and sites with our plugins using the MPEG-standard. So I am a program manager in the multimedia platform team, and the media platform team builds and lights up media functionality in IE and Windows and brings it to life in hopefully easy and fun to use APIs for you developers to implement your media scenarios like playing back video, playing back audio, capturing audio, transcoding, many things that you've already heard in talks in this very room today. And during Windows 8.1 development and with IE11 and 8.1, we're introducing two new APIs called the Media Source Extensions and the Encrypted Media Extensions. And they enable developers to build MPEG-Dash adaptive streaming clients entirely in JavaScript and HTML. And Microsoft and Netflix have actually worked closely together on those APIs. Not only have we co-authored the spec together with Google, Netflix and Microsoft have also co-engineered, so worked together closely to make sure that what gets built in Windows 8.1 and IE11 is actually going to be meeting the requirements of the biggest video streaming service in the industry. So, and Anthony's going to talk about that quite a bit in just a minute. But before we get started, I would just like to get a quick poll on your background. So before Antoine's keynote today, who had actually heard about MPEG-Dash or had heard that what it was? Okay, so we have quite a few people. And about MSE and EME, those two W3C proposals that extend. Okay, so we have a few EME and MSE experts or people that have heard of it. And has anyone... So is anyone here working with Dash right now? Somebody working with Dash deployments or is kind of actively considering using Dash? Okay. So, great. So, clicker. Okay. We have so these are the key questions that we want to answer with our talk. First of all, we would like to explain what MPEG-Dash is and, you know, how it helps you to deliver a better experience to your customers going forward. And this basically also includes describing what actually the standard is and what it covers and explicitly what it doesn't cover. And then we want to go into quite some detail about how these two new APIs work, the encrypted media extensions and the media source extensions, and how you can use them. And the third topic of questions that we want to make sure we get answered is equip you with tools and tangible guidance on how you can actually go out and develop your client pretty much today. So because there's already server support from the Azure team and there are also clients out there that you can use to get your development started. This is the agenda for our talk. We have a bit of an introduction. Largely Anthony is going to kind of also explain why Netflix is using and why it's useful for Netflix to use MPEG-Dash or saying the underlying APIs that power that can power adaptive bitrate streaming on our platform. So, and then we'll go into the standards. I'm going to explain what the standard is, what those APIs are, and exactly how you can use them in quite some detail. And then we'll point you to the tools and tangible implementation guidance. Okay. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Anthony to explain a little bit how they're using MPEG-Dash parts of the standard to power their service.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Thanks, Daniel. So I'm Anthony Park. I'm a VP of engineering at Netflix. And my team at Netflix is responsible for video streaming on computers, game consoles, and mobile and tablet devices. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit today about why Netflix is participating in helping to standardize video playback APIs. You know, our customers expect to be able to watch their favorite movies and TV shows on any operating system or browser that they're using. And we want to, and I'm sure many of you do, want to implement our video streaming player once and leverage it on all, across all of the browsers. You know, having these common playback APIs reduces the burden of developers from having different implementations on different browsers and platforms. We also want to be able to leverage our adaptive streaming algorithms that we've developed on as many platforms as possible. This is really important to us because we've done a lot of effort, put a lot of effort into optimizing and improving our adaptive streaming algorithms, and we want those so that Netflix customers can have the best possible video quality experience. And we want those to work across all platforms that we're using. So these standards allow you to implement your adaptive streaming algorithms and your video player once and use it across all of the different implementations. So we've been working with industry leaders on the definition of these new video playback APIs, and we've been working with Microsoft and the Internet Explorer team and Windows teams to implement these APIs within IE 11 on Windows 8.1. And so I'm excited to give you a first look at how Netflix works with Internet Explorer.
Do you want me to switch?
Switch to the next slide. Okay. So here I am on the show display page for the Netflix original series House of Cards. And I'm going to show you this episode playing in the Internet Explorer 11 browser without the use of browser plugins. The just to give you a little background, the House of Cards is a Netflix original series that was launched earlier this year, and the whole first season is available for streaming exclusively on Netflix. The this is a political drama that was directed by David Fincher and stars Kevin Spacey. And in the scene that you're about to see, the Frances Underwood, who's played by Kevin Spacey, is attending the inauguration of the next president of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office.
Power is a lot like real estate. It's all about location, location, location. The closer you are to the source, the higher your property value. Centuries from now, when people watch this footage, who will they see smiling just at the edge of the frame?
So help me God.
Congratulations.
I just think that's so cool. There's no browser plugins installed on this machine, so we're just using HTML5 video directly in here to play this content. This is protected content, so we're using Microsoft PlayReady DRM to make sure that this content is properly protected. We're using the media source extensions here to implement our own adaptive streaming algorithm, which means that we're downloading our audio and video content using the XML HTTP request for the bit rates that we choose based on the throughput that's available on the machine. And we're feeding that content directly into the video tag to be played. As I mentioned, we're using the encrypted media extensions with Microsoft PlayReady to play this protected content and also to acquire the PlayReady license using our own protocol. This is a pretty advanced implementation because we're using our own adaptive streaming algorithm and doing all the logic in JavaScript ourselves. But in a few minutes, Daniel's going to share with you some easy ways to get started using more of the MPEG-DASH features and frameworks. But this player has all the features that you would expect from a standard Netflix video player experience. You can view different scenes on the timeline and seek to a position in the show. You can play the next episode here. You can turn on audio options and subtitle options, and these are all rendered using HTML and CSS in the player. And you can go into full screen mode for that, you know, lean back experience. So as you can see, Netflix works great in Internet Explorer 11. I'm really excited about this. And you can try this experience out today. So this is live on the Netflix website. If you go install the latest or the Windows 8.1 preview build from Microsoft, and use IE 11, you can visit the Netflix website and you'll get this HTML5 video experience. And you can watch any title on Netflix with this technology. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the future of Netflix on Windows. You know, our goal at Netflix is to let our customers watch their favorite movies and TV shows wherever and whenever they want. And on Windows, there will be two ways to watch Netflix. We'll have the web browser, where you can watch directly in IE11, as you just saw. And many of our customers like this experience because it supports multitasking and multi-tab scenarios. And we'll also have our Windows Store application. This provides a nice touch-first design, has deep integration with platform features, and has a rich app experience, and we even support Dolby Digital 5.1 in this experience. So we think having both of these modes offers Netflix customers a great experience, regardless of which mode they prefer. At Netflix, we've been using browser plugins for high-quality video playback for a long time. In fact, I was hired at Netflix in 2008 to create the Silverlight player that we use today on the website. And even before that, we were using an ActiveX-based player for video streaming. But there's a few key advantages to moving to HTML5 video, which I want to talk about. The implementation in IE11 is wired up to Windows Media Foundation under the covers for the media source extensions. And because Windows Media Foundation uses the GPU for hardware acceleration, we get improved battery and CPU efficiency with the player. This means that full quality 1080p video is now possible in the browser on low to mid-range PCs. This is great. You know, we're really excited about the extra battery life that we get here. We're also seeing new browsers shy away from plug-in support in general. In fact, the Internet Explorer browser in the new Windows UI doesn't support plugins. And so implementing on these HTML5 video, these new extensions, allows us to stream Netflix in any browser that supports these new APIs. This also removes a hurdle for new customers. They don't have to install plugins anymore. This is just excellent. You can just click play and it just works in your browser. So we're really excited about this. So we're really excited about these new video extensions that are available in IE. And as you can see, Netflix really works great with these. And next, Daniel's going to take you through some more background information on these new APIs and talk about some simple ways for you to get started.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so we've seen how Netflix is using these new platform capabilities that we've introduced to power their adaptive streaming algorithms, and that way it's actually able to deliver a plug-in-free experience of actually HD. I don't know if you noticed that, but that was actually 1080p video that was streaming there in the browser. So it's actually pretty awesome, entirely plug-in-free, and using the native pipeline with full acceleration. Okay, so before we go into specifics on how to use those APIs, how you can use those APIs, I would like to just take a little step back and talk about adaptive streaming in general and how adaptive streaming works, and that actually then is adaptive streaming technologies across the different flavors that are out there, including, for example, smooth streaming or even HLS today. So it all starts with you have different renditions, different versions of your file, of your content, different adaptation, so that you can, you know, have the ability to serve out different bit rates according to what the client is able to consume at this point in time, depending on their computational power to decode video, but also most broadly based on their bandwidth that they have available. So you have those different versions of your content there, 480p, 720p, 1080p in this example. And then you have a manifest that will describe how these files are packaged. And every session of playing an adaptive bitrate streaming session or presentation will start with the client downloading that manifest that tells the client how which bit rates to, you can download from the server, and also where the delineation lines lie. So this content is actually packaged in a fragmented fashion. That means that the client can download a fragment of a file without having to download the whole file and then be able to playback that fragment independently. And that's exactly what this client is doing. It's kind of deciding, okay, I look at the manifest, I got these 3 bit rates. Right now I think I'm actually going to be okay with 720p. So it's going to ask the server for the 723 bit rate at a given timestamp, so at the given time of the playback presentation. In this case, 103. And each fragment here, so the server is going to deliver that fragment now. Each fragment is going to be very short. It's typically 2, 3, 4 seconds, rarely longer, which gives the client, of course, the ability to switch dynamically those bit rates in an agile fashion. So, but you know, it's a short fragment. So you know, 3 seconds later, the client will have to request the next fragment, and the server is going to retrieve it. Now the client assumes, okay, I think I have enough bitrate to step it up a bit, go to 1080p, and so the client decides, okay, server, give me the 1080p version of this. The requests here are all going to be just HTTP requests, hence the name, and work extremely well, of course, with CDN infrastructures out there. So it's possible for services like Netflix to deploy their infrastructure across normal CDN networks that are already deployed for all other kinds of HTTP content out there. So let's talk about the standards that are relevant for this. There's the MPEG Dash standard, of course, but before we kind of, but there's like a handful more that are relevant. But before we talk about those, just let me say these fall into 2 buckets. So there's the first bucket, which is the formats. So and we got the files here, as I showed you, and then the manifest itself. That's also, of course, a format, and that's being transferred from the server to the client. And then there's clients, so whatever happens on the client side and how you can actually build those clients. And we get standards that fall into both categories. The first one is the MPEG Dash standard itself. Dash, by the way, stands for Dynamic Adaptive Streaming over HTTP, in case that, I think that wasn't even mentioned up until now. It specifies standards, the format of the manifest and the media segment formats. And then we have the ISO-based media file format, edition 4, also known as the MPEG 4 container spec. This defines a way of how media files are being packaged and also deals with how fragmented content is being packaged into those MP4 files, such that the client can retrieve separate packages without having to kind of have the whole file available to playback. And then we have the common encryption ISO-based media file format. This is based on the ISO BMFF spec, and it describes a way how a client, how a server or a service can package their content in a way that it can be decrypted by multiple DRM systems. So, and we'll see how that is important, because I mean this is a standard that goes across the platforms and across different device types, and you cannot always assume that one DRM system is going to be there in all your endpoints that you're about to serve. So this is where the common encryption comes into play. So the content can be encrypted in a way that it can be decrypted from the PlayReady client, or from a WideWine client, or from an OMA DRM client. These are all DRM systems that are kind of adhering to the common encryption spec. And now we're coming to the APIs that we introduced with IE11 and Windows 8.1 for store apps as well as browser apps. So there's the media source extension, which provides a way to funnel media fragments into the media tag, so into the video tag or the audio tag. And then we have the encrypted media extensions, which allows a client to talk to a DRM system that is resident on the target machine, and perform license acquisition, essentially, or other key DRM operations. Okay, for this, let me just kind of quote from the spec, because I think they're actually saying really well what MPEG Dash is and how they describe it. So dynamic adaptive streaming over HTTP is intended to support a media streaming model for delivery of media content in which the control lies exclusively with the client, which is pretty much what I showed you in the sequence, the diagram before. The clients can request data using the HTTP protocol from standard web servers that have no dash specific capabilities. Consequently, this part of the ISO 23009 focuses not on client or server procedures, but on data formats to provide dash media presentations. So it's only about the media segment format, and it's about the media presentation description. So now, the spec is growing, or it's already fairly big, or has been growing, I should say, the dash spec. And it's been accumulating different features. So in order to make this manageable for clients to implement, because by now it would be actually a pretty sizable effort to implement a client that will support everything that's in the dash specification, the authors of the spec went and started to define profiles that kind of define a functional subset of the specification that you can use in order to play your content. So, and it'll be in the manifest, the client will say which specification, the server will say which specification a certain presentation adheres to, and then the client can decide whether it can actually understand that and understands that profile. So there are two areas or two buckets in which those profiles fall, and they're largely by the used container format. So there's the MPEG 2TS bucket on the left in green, and then we have the ISO-based media file format one. So the MPEG 2TS is a container format from the broadcast world, it's being used by HLS, for example. MSE does not, so the way that we implement the standard today, MPEG 2TS is not supported. What we support is all the one in the blue and the blue bubble, which is the ISO-based media file format, bias profiles. And here we have two sub-profiles which the dash spec talks about. One is the on-demand profile, which allows you to do on-demand content delivery. And then there's the live profile, which allows you to do both on-demand as well as live content with it. And the difference between those two profiles is that in the first case, the segments are addressed by byte ranges. So the client has to do byte range requests and can do those to just a normal HTTP server, which makes the infrastructure for your origin server even simpler. With live profile, the addressing is through timestamps. So basically say I want this certain time of the presentation and the fragment that represents it. And that has the advantage of being able to do live presentations with it too. But it requires actually a specific component at the origin of your deployment. And you'll see how this works in more detail in just a bit. So this is, as I said, the dash spec talks about the media segments, and it talks about the manifest. This is the media, a typical setup of a dash MP4 file. MP4 or ISO-based media file format is a boxed container type, so you have boxes. And within those boxes, you can have new boxes. Those boxes have always their identifier there. It has the advantage that if a client doesn't understand a certain box, you can just read over it. And if it's not essential to the presentation, then that's no harm done. So these are the top-level boxes that you would typically find in a dash file. And they fall into three segments. The first segment is the initialization segment. And that contains information that is relevant for like which codecs are being used, information on how to instantiate and initialize those codecs. And then there's also DRM information in there. As I said, multiple DRM systems can be used to decrypt this content if it's so packaged. And so this information, which DRM systems and the initialization data for those DRM systems will also be all in the init segment, the initialization segment. So the next segment, and that's one that's only there for on-demand content, is a segment index. And the segment index will give the client exact positions of each of the fragments that are in this file along with the timestamp. So if I say I need to seek to presentation time 3, then the segment index will tell me where exactly in the file and by byte range I will find presentation time 3 or the fragment for that presentation time. Of course, you'd have a hard time writing that for a live presentation at the beginning of the file because you don't know how things will end up. This is why this is something that is only relevant for the on-demand profile. And then you will have, of course, media segments, which ultimately contain the actual media, so audio or video data. And there's a box in front of the actual data, the MDAT data, which is the move box, which contains more meta information for the playback, for example, the actual timestamp for this fragment, as well as DRM information, so an IV, excuse me, the initialization vector for DRM will be found in there for each sample. Okay, and you got multiple media segments, apparently. So the other part that the spec defines is the dash spec defines is the MPD, so the media presentation descriptor. It's an XML file which describes the whole presentation. And you can see at the root, it says, under the profiles attribute here, it says which profile this content is or this presentation is authored for. In this case, it says this is a live profile. And then we have a period here. A period is basically a segment or is a contiguous time in the presentation where the representation, so the different bit rates that I'm offering, aren't changing. So I'll always have the same set of bit rates. And then within the period, you have for example, here the content protection segment, which says, okay, this presentation is actually protected, and it says that in this case here, it's using common encryption, so the client needs to basically go and find out from the meta information in the header and the initialization segment which DRM systems can be used to decrypt the content. And then we have adaptation sets here. An adaptation set is a track for the content, so we got a video track here and an audio track. You could have multiple audio tracks as well. And so each of those tracks or adaptation sets then have multiple representations for them. So here again, this is where it then maps to the files that I have on the server. You see, you know, we got the 1920, the 1080, I mean, the 720 and the 480 resolutions called out there, and it tells me which bandwidth is being used for each of those. So I can correlate that to the bandwidth that my client has available right now. And this is the segment template. The segment template is something that's only used in live profile. And it gives the client the ability to construct URLs to every part of this presentation, right? So it can create, for example, if you look at the initialization attribute there, it can create a URL for each of the bandwidth for the init segment, if it wants to, or which it will need if it wants to play them back, because it's got crucial information. And then you can see the media attribute up there, and the media attribute allows the client to create URLs for each fragment in the files by timestamp. Now, it can't just pass in any timestamp. It has to be one that falls on a boundary. And which ones fall on the boundary, is what the segment timeline is about. So the segment timeline tells the client how the fragments of the file align. And in this case, it says, okay, there's a segment that has a duration of 3 seconds, and I repeat that 430 times, right? So that's basically how this works. But that way you know, okay, there are 431 segments, each one 3 seconds long in this presentation. And that's the timestamp that the client can use to hand in. And this is something that something that only is there in the live profile. For on-demand, it's pretty much the same. You've got a different attribute, of course, at the beginning. I mean, you get the profiles attribute pointing to a different string here. And then The representations will contain the URLs directly. So you have the base URL, that is the URL, will get the client those files directly. But it's also giving the client an indication of where the segments are located, the index segment is located, and where the initialization segment is located. And then the client has to go and download that index segment in order to parse it and create its own table of where each segment lies so it can do the segment requests as it plays back. Okay, so so much for basically the formats. Now we're kind of venturing into the territory of how to implement this on Windows 8.1 and IE11. So which APIs are there for you to use? We've said it a couple of times. The media source extensions are the APIs, the API that allows you to pump those fragments that you'll be downloading into the media tag, into the video tag or the audio tag. I'm going to show you in quite some detail on how you use them. First of all, there are three objects that are relevant, or three objects or two classes. You see, first of all, there's the video tag, which references the media source, and the media source then, through its source buffers, has one audio buffer and one video buffer, and the client will append to those buffers the fragments that it downloads. So I have some sequence diagrams here. So the first one shows you how you set up your presentation. You create a media source object. So your app is the JavaScript there, right? So that's your control. And this JavaScript is going to create the new media source, which is a class that comes that's being introduced with this new API set. And then you'll set it as source to your video tag that is supposed to do the playback. And then you create, for each track that you have, you will add a source buffer to that media source. And that source buffer then gets created and is your representation for that track for your current playback session. And then you'll go and do XHR requests. And you do a lot of those. That's the first one. You go and get the init segment for the current track that you're playing back. And I'm doing this here only for video. Of course, in parallel or concurrently, you'll have to do the same for audio as well to have an audio-video playback. And once you've downloaded the init segment, you're going to call the append buffer method on the source buffer object in order to add it to your playback. Now you're initialized, and now you're going to go ahead and start playback. So first you download the init segment. Now you're going to go and download, same fashion, through XHR requests, you're going to download data segments or media segments. And you're just going to call append buffer on the source buffer again to get those into the presentation. Right? And you keep doing that because each fragment is only 3 seconds long, typically. You just keep doing that and doing that. So you're running a big loop that keeps downloading and appending buffers. Right? So your app is going to be busy doing that. It's also a good idea to be removing buffers at some point. So after we've played past the point, you can remove the buffers again. If you don't remove them, at some point, we will remove them for you, but we'll let memory probably go up to, I think our boundary is currently 200 megabytes, so it's not necessarily the right thing to let us evict. You might be in a better position to decide when it's the right time to remove buffers, so that's something that we encourage. So adaptive bitrate streaming is all about switching bitstream, so how do you do that? It's actually really easy. If you want to switch to a new bitrate, you decide that, okay, I can actually switch from the 720 to the 1080 version of the presentation, then all you need to do is you download for the new target presentation representation of the file, you just download the init segment, and you append it to your source buffer, and then you start appending new data buffers or media buffers in the, for the new representation. Okay. Finally, seek. Seek is really not much different to playback, with the exception that you have to find out where your current position actually lies in terms of the segments. Seeking occurs when the video current time is being set to a different value, apparently. So then you get a seeking event from your video tag, and you would have to go and map that current time to the right data segment. Right? And I said that is something that where the index segment helps you, or in the live case, the segment template will help you. But that's something that your app has to solve. And then you go, once you found out what the right segment is, you go download that segment and call a band buffer again. No rocket science, really. Let me just show you how that works in a real app. Okay, so this is a demo app that we've put up on the IE Test Drive website. So I think it's being linked in right now, so it's been live for a couple of days now. And it plays back content through the MSC and EME APIs. And rather than being adaptive, I have to adapt myself here. So I can say, OK, I think I actually have enough bitrate here to go up one notch. And now I'm playing at 2 megabits. And I'm being kind of adventurous, and I go up to 6 megabits in this conference setting here. OK, so it looks like now I'm playing a 1080p stream of Big Buck Bunny here. So you can go and look at this page. I have the link on the slides. What I wanted to show you is how that actually works in terms of downloading the fragment. So if I bring up the F12 tools and go to the network tab and start showing the downloads, then you can see that it's downloading, it's downloading fragment after fragment after fragment, as I told you. You can see the quality levels here. This is 6800 and 688 kilobits. And it's ever increasing the timestamp here. So this is 42, 45, 48, and it's always downloading audio and video, right? So it's fairly straightforward. So what happens when I switch the bitrate, go to the highest bitrate. Oops, I think I got to do that again. Let me clear this. So there you can see the manifest format. Okay, now let's go. Switch to the highest bit rate. Okay, and what you can see here is the request for the initialization segment for the new bit rate, which is 6 megabits. And then it'll just continue from where it left off. It had downloaded from 18 seconds and now continues on 21 seconds. So that's what this client does. You can get very smooth playback. It's really pretty amazing in 1080p out of this thing. Try it out. Okay. Protected content. So usually premium content is protected out there. So that's the reality of the industry. And the encrypted media extensions are helping or are providing a ways that the Windows, the web app or the browser app can talk to a DRM system that's located on the machine. And one thing I should say is the entry points to the APIs that we've introduced here are being prefixed with MS to signify that we're still kind of thinking that there's quite a bit of flux in those APIs. So we introduced them, they're there for you to use, but there is the potential that these are changing. With the MSE APIs that I just talked about, those aren't prefixed, and we're fairly confident that those are actually going to remain unchanged, whereas here there is the potential for change. Let me just quickly show you how this sequence flows. As I said, the initialization segment contains information about whether the content is protected and which DRM systems can be used to decrypt it. And when the video tag comes across this information as it parses the initialization segment, it's going to fire an event, which is an MS need key, you know, MS due to the prefixing, need key event, and it'll carry the init data for all the DRM systems that are supported by the file. So if you have support for PlayReady and WideWine and OMADRM in your file, then you'll see an array of three coming your way in this MS need key event, one for each of those DRM systems containing the initialization data that was found in that file, right? And then your app goes and looks, okay, which of these three DRM systems do I actually support? And it can query the box and see which of those are available. In the case of IE11 on 8.1, you will only have support for PlayReady. And then you'll create the PlayReady media keys object through this constructor with the keys identifier, the key protection system identifier, which is com.microsoft.playready. So by that call, you're basically invoking a PlayReady instance for your session. And then you set that also on the video tag, so the video tag knows who to talk to when it needs keys. And then what you're going to do is you're going to call create session on this new media keys object with the init data for the PlayReady object, for the PlayReady instance, right? So you pass that in. And PlayReady is then going to come back, or the media keys, the media keys object is going to create that session for you, and that session is going to fire write an event back at you, which is then a key message. And a key message is a message that's not for your consumption, but it's actually it's meant for the license server, right? So it's a message that can be verbatim or, you know, packaged up through your infrastructure, but then sent on to the license server. And the license server will then be able to perform a license acquisition on behalf of your client or for your client, and then send a package back in the license response there, and then you call update on the media key session with that license response. Right? And now you've acquired a license, and you're able to play back your protected content. Right? So a few things about how we implemented MSE and EME in Windows. In case that wasn't clear yet, MSE and EME can be used in IE as well as in Windows Store apps using JavaScript and HTML, which we used to call Windows Web Apps. And through those, you can playback dash segments. So this is kind of, if you were wondering, where's the link between those APIs and dash? Well, the segments, the way that they're defined in dash in the standard, as long as they're MP4 profiles, you can just pretty much verbatim funnel them into our APIs and can play them back. As I said, we don't support MPEG-2TS, just the base media file format. Supported codecs only H.264 and AAC in the browser, which is basically this subset here that the browser supports. And then for HTML store apps, you can also use digital Dolby Digital Plus. Yeah, and the PlayReady key system is pre-installed on all Windows versions with media capabilities, and that's the string how you invoke it. There are SKUs out there, I don't know if you know about N SKUs, that do not have media capabilities. Those will not have PlayReady installed. And media functionality, for that matter, in general. So how do you implement your own service So what you need in order to implement your own service is four things, at least that's our recommendation here. You probably want a sample app that gets you started quickly. There are multiple open source projects out there that are implementing Dash clients entirely in JavaScript. One that actually Microsoft has been contributing to is Dash.js, so I'm going to show you that in just a second. What I really recommend you have somewhere handy is a tool that allows you to inspect MP4 files, because at some point you'll wonder, why is this fragment not working, and why is, you know, is this initialization segment not firing me an event for play ready, although it should. And then the proof is usually in the file somewhere. You should really be able to look into those files. So MP4 Explorer is an open source tool. It's a little dated. There are also commercial tools out there. And then again, it's not super hard to parse MP4 files through your own shell scripting or things like that. But yeah, some way you will need to be able to look into your files. And then you need packaging tools, of course. Like, how do you package your content for Dash? So there is a tool out there called MP4Box that can actually package content for on-demand profile quite well. If you want to do live, of course, you need a pipeline. It's something that where this is automated and happening on a continuous basis, fragment for fragment for fragment. And there actually one is Azure has a very good offering, which works out of the box, which I'm going to show you in just a second. Delivery, same thing. If you're sticking to the on-demand profile, IIS works fine, or any other HTTP server works just fine, because the fragments are just being fetched through byte range requests, and any HTTP server I know of supports that. But again, for live, this is a bit more involved, and using existing infrastructure is helpful here. So Dash.js, I mentioned it, is a JavaScript-only implementation, or JavaScript HTML implementation of a Dash client, and it's using MSC and EME to implement its functionality. It's actually, it was made from the Dash Industry Forum, they made it their reference player. So the Dash Industry Forum is an industry association of companies, and Microsoft is part of it, and so is Netflix, and a few more, Akamai and Ericsson, and big names in the industry. And their goal of this industry association is to catalyze the usage of or the adoption of MPEG Dash in the industry. And so they have created, or they've basically said, okay, we need a reference implementation. That's the first thing the first tangible thing that they put out there, as far as a client is concerned. It's called Dash.js. And the way it works is you just, open that page here, and then you can put your manifest URL in here, and then it'll just load that manifest and play it back. So my manifest is, just rebooted my machine. Okay, so this is the manifest for Big Bug Bunny that I just played to you in this other player. And hopefully, yes. It's now adapting here. It's going directly to the highest bit rate. This player is still early days, so it might hit some snags. When you use it, it might be not ideal at the very beginning, but it's certainly a very good starting point for your projects. And I'm sure it's going to improve very quickly over time. So what do you do on the server side? So now we have a client. What do you do on the server side? Well, the really the easiest way to get started on the server side is to use the Windows Azure Media Services. So they provide you with components for building your custom media workflows in the cloud. That's all you got here. As you can see, you got encoding and format conversion. Content protection is also part of their framework. You can do on-demand as well as live streaming. And then there's other functionality for analytics and advertising and more that's a part of it. So let me just show you how their UI looks and how you can actually use your this to implement your own service. So I'm just going to their portal or their desktop, their dashboard. So I got all my servers here lined up and the services. There's this tab here for the media services. If I go there, I got my server deployments. And here I got some content here. So this is the content that I have up in the cloud. And since it takes a little bit to encode, let me just show you what I shot here earlier today in this room. Right? So I got my own Big Bug Bunny movie here. It's a little bit less involved, but it's not animated. It's real. The real thing, if you wish. Okay, so this thing I've already uploaded. It's called My Bunny MP4 Source. So it's an 8.5 megabyte file. And then what I did is I encoded this by using one of the presets that are available here. In this case, I used the Flash Silverlight preset for encoding of the file, which will give me a set of, I think it's like 5 different bit rates or 6 different bit rates to which it'll encode the file. I'm going to call this output 2 because I don't want to overwrite my existing one. And then you'll see how it's in creating this job here. It's creating an encoding job for this content. If we look in the jobs tab, it hopefully, yeah, it's queued now and now it's encoding. Now this, oh, it's still queued, but anyway, so it'll switch to encoding in just a second. So this is taking a little too long for me to wait for here right now. And of course, you know, depending on the length of your file and so on, it's going to take quite some time. So I already did that before and created this this output here that it's called. And it gave me a URL here. After so the last step you have to do is you actually have to publish your URL or your content, and then you get a URL for your content. And this URL is pointing to the manifest for this presentation now. However, since Dash is still kind of new and also new to our friends over in the Windows Azure Media team, this is the Silverlight manifest that this is pointing to. But if I just append a little string to it, I can force it to be in Dash format. So now I'm going to load this and cross my fingers. Okay. So this is the video that I shot here this morning. As I say, the player is kind of, you see, it's not very good at keeping right now it's keeping the buffer pre-populated. Again, Dash.js is still work in progress, but I think it's making good progress already, and it will get there soon. So there's one thing I should point out. If you use Windows Azure for your Dash delivery, you have to scale your servers. That's something that happens here in the scale, because this is not a... We're not encoding to this format directly, but we're just encoding to normal like MP4 files. And then what happens there is the called the dynamic muxing or Dynamux feature, which will then deliver this content into different formats. And Dash is one of those Dynamux features, Dynamics formats. And for that Dynamics feature, you need on-demand streaming units to be cranked up here to at least have at least one on-demand streaming unit here. So when you use this, make sure that you scale your installation up. And there's a gotcha there because that's something that you need dollars for, and I'll talk to that in just this next slide. So you can use what I just showed you. You can use that today. You can. There's two ways. One is you go create a free Azure trial account. And with that trial account, it's valid for 1 month. You get $200, and those $200, you can use a portion of that to scale up those units. So that will allow you to do the MPEG Dash delivery right there. And make sure that you append that string to the end so that you can actually play back MPEG Dash, or you get the MPEG Dash manifest. And the other option is to just use your MSDN account. If you have one, you can activate Windows Azure Media Services for it, or just basically Windows Azure for it. And there is, as you can see, there's a monthly credit that you get for each of for some of the tiers of MSDN accounts. And you can use those credits then to scale your installation up. Okay, a few things to note. When you implement your client, when you're fetching the segments, you have to be aware that they usually come from a different server than the page that is requesting them. So your player page is usually going to be at a different URL because the fragments will usually come through the CDN. Make sure that your CDN server or wherever the fragments are being delivered from, that they observe the course headers. So they need to send course headers so that the inclusion is actually allowed. Otherwise, the browser is going to say that it won't allow the inclusion. And the same or the very similar problem is, or thing to be aware of is that your host, the player should be hosted in an HTTP, at a HTTP URL, because an HTTPS URL will not allow you to do an XHR request to an HTTP resource. Same problem is, the user, this is with like things like banking sites in mind, and you have this nice, the padlock that's closed at the top of the URL. If then everything that gets included in that page or things that get included into that page come from an HTTP URL, then you can't really make that promise that this page is secure, right? So this is why the browser doesn't allow that. Things just to be aware of. For power efficiency, Gabe talked about a little bit in his session today. As well as Israel, actually, you should avoid unnecessary disk caching. You're downloading those fragments, and there's a lot of those that you're downloading. For an HD movie, it can be like a gigabyte of data that you're downloading. Really no need to store that on the disk and let that flow through the cache. XHR, however, will normally cache it on disk if you don't tell it not to. So this is why we've introduced this MS caching disabled feature, so that you can actually tell XHR this request should not go to the disk, especially on low power devices that have BitLocker drives. It's actually a fairly expensive operation that costs you, in the order of like half an hour of battery time for the user when he plays back an HD movie. The other thing, also, and with power in mind, is going full screen. The really easiest way to do it is to use that API. You can, of course, kind of scale it to occupy all the pixels, but you might have rounding errors in the logic, in your logic, and we've seen that. Different form factors that you might not have thought of. Weird screen resolutions out there sometimes. So using that API guarantees that you're actually occupying the whole full screen, which will then in turn make sure that the compositor doesn't have to kick in and do some kind of compositing that the user isn't really seeing, because there's like one pixel or one row of pixel, one line of pixel still visible behind the video tag. And then, it's all about adaptive bitrate streaming. How do you adapt the bitrate, or when do you adapt? So monitoring the download speed of your XHR requests is, of course, the first order of things that you should do. because that will tell you what the bandwidth is that the user has available currently as it's playing back the session. And then there are also APIs that are introduced and part of the MSE API set that inform the client about the playback quality that the user is currently experiencing, which means if usually that won't be a problem for Windows 8 hardware because it will all be hardware accelerated and so on, but you know, people might be installing Windows 8.1 on older hardware that might not have as capable video drivers and video hardware. So there are these APIs here, these attributes here that give the app a way to judge how good the experience the user is currently getting in terms of the playback. Right? So whether we're dropping frames, whether there's a jitter happening. So I should caveat, and I'm doing this here, that these attributes are actually likely to change. But the spirit remains, we will have APIs there that will allow you to determine whether the users, whether the presentation is dropping frames or not. Okay. So this sums it up. Pretty much used up my hour. Anthony and I have used it up. We told you that you know how MPEG Dash, what the standard covers, and you know how it's actually helping clients to have one format going forward for all their different clients. And then NIE and Windows Store apps using JavaScript and HTML, MSE is available for you, and can be leveraged to use the same code across apps and sites, of course, across different clients that support it going forward. It takes full advantage of the hardware, such that Netflix is now able to do 1080p in the browser and without plugins. And end-to-end tools are available today, so you can get started and code your Dash clients today using the tools that I've lined out here. So we're looking forward to seeing your apps. Thank you very much. I'm going to be around here for quite a couple of minutes, so you can ask questions. And then also I'll be over in Hall D for in the office space there, so if you have any further questions. Thank you.